Kunta planets. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us how to approach the Supreme Lord and ask Him for the ultimate benediction. He said, Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye. He did not want to ask the Supreme Lord for anything material. Material opulence means riches, a nice family, a good wife, and many followers. But an intelligent devotee doesn't ask the Supreme Lord for anything material. His only prayer is, Mama janmani janmarishvare pavatad bhakti ahoituki tvayi. He wants to be engaged but perpetually in the loving service of the Lord. He does not want promotion to the heavenly planets or mukti, liberation from material bondage. If this were the case, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not have said, Mama janmani janmani. It doesn't matter to a devotee whether or not he takes birth life after life, as long as he remains a devotee. Actually, eternal liberty means returning home back to Godhead. A devotee is never concerned about anything material. Although Nabi Maharaj wanted a son like Vishnu, wanting a son like God is also a form of sense gratification. A pure devotee wants only to engage in the Lord's loving service. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jananjana Shalakya Chakshu Vinamitam Jena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, here we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 3, and this chapter is entitled Rishabhdev's Appearance, but I would like to just go back and get an overview of the bigger picture of this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here we have, in the beginning of the fifth canto, it starts with Swayambhuva Manu. And of course, Swayambhuva Manu is one of the Manus within, one of the 14 Manus who appears in the day of Lord Brahma. So, Lord Brahma, of course, his day is 4.32 million years, and his lifetime is 311 trillion and 40 billion years. So here we are within the middle of Lord Brahma's day. Right now, Lord Brahma is 50. His age is 50, within his 100 years. So we are within the middle of Lord Brahma's lifetime, and we are also in the middle of his daytime. There are 14 day manus in a day of Lord Brahma, and currently the current manu is Vaivashvata Manu, who is the son of Vivishvan. So he is actually currently the current manu ruling our universe. And of course, Vaivashvata Manu is one of the Manus. So, Swayambhuva Manu was the first Manu in the day of Lord Brahma. And the fifth canto commences with Svayambhuva Manu. And here, what we're finding in the Srimad Bhagavatam is an outline of the responsibilities of the Lord Brahma and also the various Manus, who are the administrators of our universe. The Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us the bigger picture of what is happening within this world. Just like we read in the news, we find out what's going on the earthly planet. But here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find out what is going on, happening in our universe, and how we are affected by that. So Svayambhuva Manu had two sons, Maharaj Priyavrata and Uttanapad. And Priyavrata, of course, was the prominent son. And from Maharaj Priyavrata, we see so many expansions. There's a very nice description of him here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, of all of his activities and how he was approached by Maharaj Priyavrata. He was very renounced. He was celibate. He didn't want to get involved with material affairs. And although he was very qualified to do so, but he was hesitant to do so because when somebody is renounced and has renounced all material desires, the proposition of getting involved in extensive material activities in the material world is not a very attractive proposition. So Lord Brahma and Narada Muni and Svayambhuva Manu, King Priyavrata's father, convinced him to take up the responsibility to do this service. Srila Prabhupada explains in some of those earlier purports how a devotee is prepared to follow the order of the disciplic succession. So that was the order that Maharaj Priyavrata had actually received, which was to engage in devotional service. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he has given us our order, which is to participate in the Krishna consciousness movement and spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world in whichever way we may like to participate. So Maharaj Priyavrata consequently got married to the daughter of Vishvakarma. Vishvakarma is the architect of the demigods. And and of course Vishvakarma, he would design buildings and cities according to the rules of Vedic architecture. So it so happens that Maharaj's King Priyavrata's wife was the daughter of, her name is Bahismati. She was the daughter of Vishvakarma. So what we learn from that, we learn so many things from Srimad Bhagavatam. We're learning all the time how these great sages and saints, how they are engaged in devotional service, how they the mistakes that they made, the good things that they did, and so on. So one thing that we learn is that here we are building a city in Mayapur, and Srila Prabhupada wanted a Vedic city, so we should make it as Vedic as possible. That's a little, I know I'm digressing a little bit here, but the Vedic culture was that you would have great personalities like Vishvakarma, who would design cities and living spaces, any kind of construction, according to certain auspicious and inauspicious considerations. So, King Priyavrata got married, and then he had 10 sons, and of his 10 sons, 3 of them became sannyasis, and 7 of his sons were rulers of the seven islands. And the most prominent of his sons was Maharaj Agnidra. So Maharaj Agnidra was the first son, and he also consequently married again. And when he married again, he had three sons, and those three sons actually became, they were so powerful, they became the subsequent three Manus. One was Raivata, the other one's Uttam, and the other one is Tamasa. So he had these three sons were very powerful Manus. And so they came from Maharaj Agnidra's second wife. And so Maharaj Agnidra's most prominent son was Maharaj King Nabi. So King Nabi here is, in this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he is being described. His activities are being described. And of course, from King Nabi came Lord Rishabdev. King Nabi was so great that he gave birth to an incarnation of Krishna, Lord Rishabdev. And Lord Rishabdev consequently had 100 sons, of whom the most prominent was Maharaj Bharat. And the entire India is named Bharatvas after Maharaj Bharat. So we see Maharaj in this particular fifth canto, this lineage, this very prestigious lineage coming from Swayambhuva Manu, down to, and so, some of the other Manus are also mentioned. King Priyavrata is mentioned, King Agnidra is mentioned, and now we have Maharaj Nabi being mentioned, and then later we come into Rishabdev. Rishabdev is about to appear, and then we have Lord Rishabdev's sons, and then we have Bharat Maharaj appearing from that, and Bharat, and of course Indi was formerly known as Bharatvas, the tract of land which is ruled by King Bharat. So King Bharat, and actually there have been some motions I heard in India to rename India as Bharatvas. It would be nice if that happened, because that would be a great honor to Bharatvas, to King Bharat, and King Bharat's prestigious lineage of Vaishnavas who are ruling our universe. I don't know what the update on that is, but there was some talk among some Indian politicians that they would like to rename India as Bharatvas. Perhaps somebody else could comment on the update of that situation. I mean, other things have been changed. Formerly, it was Bombay. Bombay got changed to Mumbai, because Mumbai, I think, got something to do with Goddess Durga, and then Calcutta has become Kolkata. So maybe another change might be there in the future, that India might get India's former name of Bharatvas may get reinstated. Let's see if that happens. Anyway, so Maharaj here in this particular verse, the brahmanas, the brahmana priests, are commenting. Maharaj Nabi, of course, he wants to get a son. Like, he wants to get a son. And we notice also from the previous chapters that when Priyavrata wanted to get a son, he would do some tapasya. When Maharaj Agnidra wanted to get a son, he would do some tapasya. And when Maharaj Nabi wanted to get a son, he would do some tapasya. So what are we learning here? What we are learning is that when procreating for children, we should perform some tapasya. in order to invoke auspiciousness, in order to invoke a living entity that will be an auspicious personality. So you can imagine Maharaj Nabi here, they are doing a sacrifice, and Lord Vishnu himself appeared in the sacrifice. And Lord Vishnu, of course, he knew everything that was happening, but we read here that the brahmanas were very concerned that Maharaj Nabi was asking something from the Lord, that he was requesting something. This was their concern. You can see here where Srila Prabhupada mentions the priests were a little ashamed that King Nabi was performing a great sacrifice just to ask the Lord's benediction for a son. So here we're talking about a very high level of devotional service. A very high level of devotional service where we are taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not to ask Krishna for anything. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. That we don't want any of those things. Don't want wealth. Don't want wife. Na dhanam, wealth, wife. Na dhanam, na janam, and followers. No sundarim. The devotees, they don't want these. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying renounce that. But actually, we see a contradiction to this with some devotees who desire to be the parent of Krishna. There are devotees like Vasudeva and Devaki. In their previous lifetimes, they performed penances and austerities just to get Krishna as their son. And here, the Brahmana priests, they're saying to King Nabi, you want to get Krishna as your son? This is sense gratification. Why are you doing this? This is, you should be ashamed of yourself, is what they're saying. So, where is that? There is a particular statement here. Srila Prabhupada explains here, although Nabi Maharaj wanted a son like Vishnu, wanting a son like God is also a form of sense gratification. Actually, it's transcendental sense gratification. But it's such a high level. If some devotee, if someone in this very lifetime can achieve that platform of desiring to be the parent of Krishna and to serve Krishna in that way, that's a very elevated stage of devotional service. But even that stage of devotional service is being put aside for a higher stage of devotional service, wherein the devotee doesn't even consider his own preference, that I would like to serve you in this way or that way. Birth after birth, I only want to serve you janmani, janmani, ishwari. Birth after birth, after birth, after birth. Now, this consciousness or level of devotional service is very rarely achieved, in fact. There's one statement, verse in the Bhagavatam, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Angham Dunvantikas Nyena Niharam Eva Bhaskara. That Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. Vasudeva Parayana, the purport to this verse by Srila Prabhupada is about 12 pages long. And he describes what is Vasudeva Parayana. Vasudeva Parayana means one is devoted to Krishna without any other desire. Kechi kevalaya Vasudeva Parayana Angham dunvanti kasnyena. That the kasnyena means destroyed. The sinful desire seed within the heart is completely destroyed so that it never comes up again. Angham dunvansi kasnyena niharam iva bhaskaraha. That just as the sun dissipates the rays of the fog, so such Vasudeva Parayana dissipates all material contamination and selfish desires from within the heart. It is also, there is another description of devotional service by Lord Kapiladev. He describes there are four kinds of devotional service. There's devotional service in the mode of ignorance, passion, goodness, and then there is transcendental devotional service. So he describes that devotional service in the mode of ignorance, there are different lakshanam, there are different symptoms. And those, what are those symptoms of devotional service in the mode of ignorance? Envy, pride, anger, and illusion. These are the symptoms of a devotee who's struggling with the modes of ignorance. But it is devotional service, serving Krishna. But it's mixed with those things. Angry, envy, pride, illusion. Devotional service in the mode of goodness is described as by Lord Kapiladev, that the devotee only sees Krishna, the deity in the temple. And he is attached to worshipping the deity in the temple, only sees the deity in the temple, and he wants fame and honor for such worship. And then in the mode of goodness, a devotee renders devotional service without any expectation of anything in return. He's just simply satisfied to render service to Krishna. But then, the type of devotional service that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talking about here in this purport, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim, is also described by Lord Kapiladev as Madguna Shuti Matrena Mai Sava Guhasaye Manogatim Avichchena Tata Gangam Baso Mubudho Lakshanam Bhakti Jogasha Nigunasha Hihudaritam Ahoituki Apratihata Ya Bhakti Purushotame. This is the description of pure devotional service. And what is that? Madguna Shuti Matrena. That Madguna Shuti Matrena. Madguna, Krishna is saying, my qualities. Shuti, hearing. Matrena, just by hearing about the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mai Sava Guhasiye. By hearing about the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that is who is situated within everyone's heart. Mai Sava Guhasiye. Guhasiye means, Sava Guhasiye means the Lord who is situated within everyone's heart. Mano Gatir Avichchena. The mind immediately becomes attracted to hearing. Madguna Shruti Manogatir Vishana Yata Gangam Baso Mubudho. That just as the Ganges water is flowing unobstructed down towards the ocean, so the mind of a pure devotee is immediately attracted to hearing about Krishna, to chanting Krishna's names. That Manogati Avichchena. Just like sometimes somebody will say something and your mind becomes alert. Just like if we say after the class we have some strawberry ice cream, the mind becomes alert. Strawberry, of course, offered to Krishna. So that the mind immediately becomes alert. So similarly, the mind of a pure devotee, as soon as he hears the transcendental name of Krishna, there's something happens in his mind. There's an attraction there. Manogati avichchena. Manogati avichchena. There's an attraction there. So the brahmanas around King Nabi, they're talking about such a high level of devotional service that they're even questioning why Maharaj Nabi is asking to have a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which in itself is a very exalted devotional service. So in that verse, Lakshanam Bhakti Yoga Shah. Lakshanam means symptoms. Lakshanam Bhakti Yoga Shah. Nigunasha Hiudharitam. Nigunasha. Nigunasha means it's not tinged. Nigunasha. No guna. No, none of the gunas that Nigunasha. Hiudharitam. There's no trace of it. Lakshanam Bhakti Yoga Shah. Nigunasha Hiudharitam. Ahoituki apratihata. Ya bhakti purushotame. Ya bhakti purusha. This is pure devotional service. The mind is simply feeling that attraction. Of course, we're all here in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes our mind is in that state. Our mind, everyone here has experienced some transcendental bliss and attraction for the holy name, for hearing about Krishna, for seeing Krishna, and for serving Krishna. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. But in the symptoms of a pure devotee is that this ecstasy of remembering the Lord, serving the Lord, is never broken. Ahoituki apratihata. Ya bhakti purushottame. That this bhakti is rendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's another nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Yomam evam asam mudho janati purushottama sasava vid bhajate mam sava bhavena bharata. That yomam evam asam mudho. For one who understands me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting, yomam imam asam mudho, that means without doubting. For one who understands Krishna without doubting, is considered to be the knower of everything. Yomam imam asam mudho, janati purushottara, sasavavid, he knows everything. Sasavavid, he knows everything. Actually, you don't need to be unknowledgeable. You don't need to perform austerity. We don't need to do anything other than, as Krishna says, one who simply accepts, or who is God. And you ask some people who have been raised in Krishna conscious families, who is God? Who is the Supreme Personality? They say Krishna. I said, are you sure? It's Krishna. Are you sure? Without doubting. Yomam evam asam mudho. Without doubting. And according to that conviction, one becomes the knower of everything. We must have that conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no higher truth. There's no higher understanding. I don't want to know anything about anything else. Nothing else is important. The ultimate test is, there were some devotees in, I think it was one of these African countries. So they were being persecuted because of their devotion to Krishna consciousness. So they had to face the choice that either you give up Krishna consciousness or we'll kill you. So what would you do? Yomam evam asam buddho. Would you say, no, Krishna is, I have no doubt, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Or would you bargain with them? Maybe I'll agree, but then later I'll disagree. So that I can live longer and preach. That's also possibly an option. But anyway, what happened was that, those devotees, very staunch devotees, they said, no, we accept Krishna. We will not give up Krishna. You kill us. And consequently, they got killed. But of course, Krishna will certainly recognize that. And Krishna, I mean, it's the perfect way to die. But we hope that none of our devotees die like that. But I'm just bringing up the point, is that Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita that yomam imam asam mudho, just one who accepts me as the Supreme Personality of God without doubting. You don't even have to have any knowledge. You just say, okay, that's my conviction, and I'm not going to change my mind ever. I will die remembering Krishna. You cannot convince me to convert to any other religion. I will not go to any other religion. I will only see Krishna as my Lord. That's how Lord Chaitanya prays. I know no one is Krishna as my Lord, and he shall always remain my worshipable Lord unconditionally, as we hear in the Shikshastakam prayers that have been recited very nicely every day in the temple by the Gurukul boys. It's such a pleasure to hear that every day. I can't refrain from the opportunity to thank them enough for that wonderful recitation they do of the Shikshastakam prayers in the temple every day, reminding us of those wonderful prayers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which we are being reminded of here in this purport by Srila Prabhupada. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we learn everything. We learn pure devotional service. We learn what is impure devotional service. We learn what is Vedic culture. We learn how the great kings in the past performed their duties in Krishna consciousness. We learn from Lord Brahma. We learn from Swayambhuva Mana. We learn from Lord Rishabhdev. We are learning from so many great saints and sages, and also from the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is such a wonderful source of enlightenment. But the point here that's being expressed in this purport is the nature of unconditional, alloyed, pure devotional service, which is kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva paraya. It's very rarely achieved. Very rarely achieved. But Srila Prabhupada is always pushing us in that direction. Srila Prabhupada is always pushing us in that direction. And some devotees sometimes argue it's too high. We cannot, that's fine. But at least if one is not desirous of pure devotional service, if one thinks that is too austere, then Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that whatever your desire, akama savakama va moksha kama hudharadhya, that whether you are full of material desires, whether you have no material desires, or whether you are desirous of liberation, just worship Krishna. I know this point came up that we encounter devotees. So within our worldwide society for Krishna consciousness, we have so many different devotees and so many levels of devotional service. But we're all combining together to aspire for the kind of devotional service that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. Now, if we don't achieve that level, if we end up becoming a Lord Brahma, if we end up becoming Manu, if we end up becoming like Maharaj Nabi, if we end up becoming like Maharaj Agnidra, what is the loss? And in fact, the devotee prays that simply birth after birth, I want the association of your devotees. I may not be pure, but at least give me the association of pure devotees so that one of these many millions of lifetimes I may attain to that pure devotional service. But what is crucial is that life after life after life, we get the association of devotees. Or there's another option. Krishna can give us liberation in this very lifetime. We can go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. Don't take birth as Lord Brahma. Don't take birth as a Brahma, as a Manu. Or don't go to the heavenly planets. Go straight to Gokula Vrindavan, then Goloka Vrindavan. That's also a possibility. Back to Godhead means so many different things. When a devotee goes back to Godhead, it means simply going back to the service of Krishna. There are many different levels of that. If somebody dies and goes back to this material creation and he's in the association of devotees and serving Krishna, that is back to Godhead. But there's another back to Godhead that Srila Prabhupada explains, that he says, if you follow the four regular principles, you preach Krishna consciousness on my behalf, and I guarantee you that by my guarantee, you go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. Now, so although that's normally not attainable, it's attainable by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. By his mercy, because if Srila Prabhupada promises that, Krishna will fulfill it. The desire of a Mahabhagavat, whatever he pledges, Krishna will fulfill it. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in one place that going back to Godhead means that in your next life you may take birth in Gokula Vrindavan, and there you may follow in the footsteps of the devotees that you are attracted to, and the type of devotional service that you are inclined to render, and then get further training in one of the Gokula Vrindavas in the universes where Krishna is having his pastimes, and after getting that further training, go back to Goloka Vrindavan. So anything is possible. The key thing is what you desire. It's all down to what you, me, every single one of us, as individuals, what we personally desire. And then Krishna will fulfill that. Krishna is all merciful. So Maharaj Nabi here, he is desiring to have a son like Krishna. And the other Brahmanas say, no, don't desire anything. So they just kind of, and Prabhupada explained, it is a form of sense gratification, because there are the five types of liberations, and four liberations are Vaishnava liberations: Svarupya, Svamipya, Shasti, and Shalokya. A devotee will desire to have the same opulences as the Lord, to live on the same planet as the Lord, to have the association of the Lord, and to have the same bodily features as the Lord. So the devotee can desire one of those. Just like one devotee might say, okay, I want to be opulent. I want to live like a king. Krishna is opulent, I want to be opulent. That's a Vaishnava liberation. But that liberation is not ultimately recommended. But there's one place in Nectar of Devotion where Srila Prabhupada mentions that the six Goswamis would never desire any of the Vaishnava liberations. And the Ekatva liberation of merging into the Brahman existence is not an option for Vaishnavas. There's only the four Vaishnava liberations. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Nectar of Devotion that the six Goswamis would sometimes desire the four Vaishnava liberations, sometimes, according to their moods of Krishna consciousness. So it goes back to the point that I'm making, it depends on your desire. One day you might think, okay, I'm going to come back and desire, my desire is to spread Krishna consciousness and preach, just come back life after life and do that. But on another day, you might not desire that. You might have a bad day. And so, no, I want to go back to Godhead. I'm going to get out of here. I had enough. My body's this material, birth, death, old age, and disease. I don't want to come back. I don't want to see it again. And that's good. We recommend it. Prabhupada says, go back to Godhead. He preaches. He says, we go out to preach. When we preach to people, we say, hey, you want to go back to Godhead? They say, yeah, I want to get out of here. Then when he gets in here, we say, oh, we're preaching to you. Don't go back to Godhead. You stay here and preach. So then they say, you didn't preach to me that when I first came in. When I first came in, you said you were going to get me out of this place. So again, both desires are good. There's nothing, we should never condemn another Vaishnava for desiring liberation and all that kind of thing. We should just concentrate on what we are desiring. And also, if you desire to have the same bodily features as Krishna, to live on the same planet, go for it. Go for it. That's nice. We encourage it. What's wrong with that? Eventually you might realize, oh, maybe I hassle Krishna, maybe I disturb Krishna by asking him for something. Okay, I'm not going to ask him for something. That's up to you. But either way, we should approach Krishna. Okay, I think we have to stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Prabhuji, at the back.
Ajamil Prabhu, thank you very much for a nice class. In case of pure devotee, the liberation is already within him. He's holding that. He doesn't care to go home back to Godhead. He's thinking how to rescue the lives of the conditioned souls. But whereas for the regular devotees, they're thinking, oh, I'm tired of this place, I want to get out of this place, I want to go home back to Godhead. So my point is that how you are categorizing, you are talking about the regular devotee or you are talking about the pure devotee?
I don't quite get the gist of your question. Just bring it into a nutshell. What is it, the two?
In case of the regular devotees, they are thinking that I want to go home back to Godhead.
Right.
I want to get out of this place.
Right.
But as the pure devotee is thinking that before I go home back to Godhead, I want to rescue many, many conditioned souls, as many as it is possible. So you have mentioned just that devotees want to get out from this place, they're tired of this material world. What category you want to put them?
Well, as I said before, there are different. Each individual devotee has their individual relationship with Krishna, and they can desire to go back to Godhead. They can desire not to go back to Godhead and to preach here. That's their individual choice. There is one example how the desire of even the six Goswamis fluctuated according to their moods in Krishna consciousness. He said sometimes they would desire even the four Vaishnava types of liberation. So apart from that, there's those two categories of those who desire pure unalloyed devotional service. They want to stay here. They want to come back again. And those who don't want to come back again. And so in this context, there's those two categories of devotees. Does that answer your question?
Fine. Thank you.
Okay.
This verse quotes Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavita va jagadisha kamaye. Janma jamani, birth after birth. I don't mind coming back to the material world, birth after birth. But then the question I always have about the Shashastika prayers, in the very next verse, Ayi nanda tanunja kinkaram, patitamam vishame bhavam budal, kripaya tava parapanka just ditaduli sadrisham vichitaya. Lord Chaitanya says, O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servitor, and I am your eternal servitor, and I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as an atom at your lotus feet. Mm. So you get one verse where it says, birth after birth, I'm cool with it. And in the very next verse, you get a verse where it says, please pick me up and get me out of here. So my question is, I'm always confused by this, these two verses putting right next to each other. Should we desire to get out of here? Or should we be just okay with being here birth after birth?
That's a good, very good point, which further puts further light on the point that I made, which is that the devotee can desire liberation or not desire liberation and to come back here birth after birth. So that's a very good example how Lord Chaitanya's mood might have fluctuated just within those Shikshastakam prayers, because to pick me up and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet is a desire for liberation. It's asking Krishna for something, isn't it? Yes, yeah. So, yeah, very good example. Which further elaborates on the point that each individual devotee is has their particular relationship with Krishna. Those devotees, those Mahabhagavats, who actually really desire to come back and birth after birth after birth, and they actually do come back birth after birth, and they're like, they go to the preaching Sankirtan movement, those devotees are very, very special. And I think along with, now, then you, along with the Krishna consciousness, along with Lord Chaitanya, you know, so many devotees have come here. So the other question that arises, you know, where are all these devotees coming from? Were they previously, you know, spreading the Krishna consciousness movement? There was one thing that Srila Prabhupada said in 1974 in the Lotus Building. The building had just opened, and he said, actually, I am unfit to be your leader. He said, you are all doing this, spreading this Krishna consciousness movement because in your previous lifetimes, you were associated with Lord Chaitanya's movement, and he's put you in these other countries. So that's an indication of birth after birth. But now, whether that goes on birth after birth unlimitedly, that's up to each individual devotee. But that's a fact that Prabhupada said that. That's why when he came around, and then he goes to New York, and then he starts chanting Hare Krishna, and all of a sudden three or four sannyasis come. How is it they could become a sannyasi so quickly? Because of a previous lifetime. Just as the air carries its aromas from one place to the other, so the living entity carries its different conceptions of life from one body to another. So if someone's previously a devotee, you just say Hare Krishna and immediately they become a devotee. So, Prabhuji, you have a question?
Just wondering if, when you said that in Africa there's devotees, and they said you have to change your, you have to convert or we'll kill you.
Yeah.
But is it okay to desire to live longer to preach? Is that okay? I mean, like, they could have lied. They could have lied to them and said we won't, but actually they could have, in their minds, chant Hare Krishna, they could do devotional service in their internally, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is that okay? Is that desire okay?
So his question is that relating to the situation where life or death situation, you give up Krishna consciousness or I'll kill you. There's someone has a gun at your head. what would you do? So again, it's an individual, each devotee would respond to that individually as per their conviction. What would I do? I would try to outsmart him. I would say, okay, look, let's negotiate something. I say, I'll give up Krishna consciousness, but then to what extent? Because, you know, if you talk about giving up Krishna consciousness, you're not actually giving it up. There's at one point where you consciously give it up, but you could say you're giving it up and not give it up and not really mean it. I mean, this is a little bit of trickery, but in a life or death situation, these things are acceptable in order to save your life. So, I mean, that's probably my approach, but the devotee that was involved was a simple, one of them was a simple Mataji. She was just very, you know, you take Krishna away, no way am I, you kill me, but I'm not giving up Krishna. So that was her approach. So, you know, best thing is to try and get out of it and save yourself so that you can preach more. That's definitely the best, but if as a last resort, yes, I would say, okay, kill me. You know, if there was no other river, then, okay, at least you die quickly. You don't have to go through the process of jara, old age. You know, because old age is like a very slow and painful death. And if you die in the service of Krishna, you for sure you're liberated. No question about it. Absolutely no. You die in the service of Krishna. If you are traveling in a vehicle in the service of Krishna and you die, you've died in the service of Krishna and you're liberated. There's no question, no doubt about that. So, how would you react?
I think I would lie to them, but actually internally chant Hare Krishna, and then maybe I'll move out of the country, I don't know, and preach.
Okay, any other questions? Prabhuji? Yeah.
Prabhupada says, if you are smart, then you sneak out from that place. Even if you have to lie, then you lie and you get out from that place and then you preach. That's what Prabhupada says.
Yeah, for preaching, there's one place where Prabhupada says you can eat meat. So it's a valid statement. You could just, you know, lie, try to get out of it. But anyway, we're meditating here on a very unlikely situation. However, Krishna does say asam mudho, without doubting. See, the test of life is what is going to go through our mind at the last moment. That's the test. If somebody cannot fast for one day, they're not going to pass the test at the time of death, in my opinion. Because if we're thinking of the body when we die, then that'll be bodily consciousness. However, the wonderful thing about the association of devotees is that you can, if a devotee puts Ganga Jal on you, if the devotee puts the Tulsi garland on you, or Krishna's garland, you're liberated. So just stay in the association of devotees. Doesn't matter if you're in bodily consciousness. You can say ouch. You can say You can say any of these material things. But if you're in the association of devotees, the devotees will liberate it. And I have seen it. There's many devotees that sadhu sango sava sastrikai lava matra sadhu sango sava siddhi hoy. All perfection can be gained by sadhu sangha. That way, if we stay in the association of devotees, what's going to happen? Like, if there's a devotee dying here, we're all going to put the tulsi garland on him. And it says in the shastra that if the tulsi leaf or the tulsi wood is touching your body at the time of your death, immediately you go to Vaikuntha. So, I think we're going over time here, isn't it? I better stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.